rich people, thought Judy. She thought this then, and she thinks it now, generally become most enraged when they sense they're about to be held accountable for their wrongs.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that brings you book talks, RIP, but also not, most popular books, and tells you whether or not you should take the time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. And today, we haven't done this in a while. We have like a mystery thriller for you. We're really bad at doing these outside of spooky season, so...
yeah,
here we are. We are doing The God of the Woods. It has a really cool cover. You've probably seen it on your social media or featured in your local bookstore. It is the story of a rich kid's summer camp and two siblings who go missing, like, I don't know, a decade apart at the same camp. So it ends up being the tale of kind of like the mystery over the two time periods. And at the end, it like all comes together as you would expect. But it's also about the difference between like the wealthy and the not wealthy and the tensions that can arise in those relationships and just lots of toxic relationships in general.
Whole host of them.
Yeah. It's a mystery. You're not sure if the people are alive who are missing or not. So, yeah. Do you guys have reviews to get us started?
Oh, my God. I want to go last. I have several one stars.
Okay. Well, then I will kick us off with a one star, which a lot of them were long. So I'm only going to read the first sentence and give you the gist of the rest of it. So... this one star on Goodreads says, mystery thriller. There was nothing thrilling about this book. The only real mystery is how the author managed to drag this out for 500 pages. And the reviewer said she stopped after 200 pages and then skipped to the ending just to find out how it ended. And And then she said, I'm so glad I did. So I didn't waste 300 pages on this book. And I was like, that's savage.
That is so
savage. Oh my gosh.
Honestly, do I wish I'd done it? Maybe.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, well, I had a hard time on Storygraph finding one-star reviews, but that were interesting, at least. Here, I have 2 4 stars. The first one, I'm going to skip a little bit of it, but it ends with, this book is much more about class discrepancies and the way that men's actions impact the lives of women than it is about murder.
Yeah.
Yes. 100,000%.
That is very true.
And then I picked this other one just for you too. It's a 4.5 stars and it says, great story. This is what Where the Crawdads Sing wished it was.
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah, actually. Yeah. And I see that.
Mm-hmm. In the class consciousness of it. Yes. Yeah.
After they said that, I was like, they did kind of feel similar reading them.
Yeah, they did. I don't think
this author is accused of murder. So,
yeah, hopefully that was our last perhaps murderer that we read. Okay. So I have a whole string of like 1-star reviews that are all super short.
We're ready.
So I'm just going to list them off. Took forever to go nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
The book cover is the 1-star.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's good.
Sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A slow burn into nothingness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then this one actually most, I felt like, resembled like my thoughts. And I was really jealous this person found a way to write it in such a quippy way. But they said, thank you, Liz Moore, for curing my insomnia. The author is a very good writer and a terrible storyteller.
Oh, dear.
Wow.
I actually, when I was looking at reviews, Casey's, I feel like really perfectly encompassed how I felt about the book.
Same. Oh. Literally.
You guys.
I saw we all agreed on the star rating and I was like, yeah.
Thank God.
I haven't seen Catherine's star rating, but I'd seen Casey's. And I was like, wow, she really just wrote that. Should we read Casey's?
Okay. Do you guys want to read it?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, read it if you have it up.
Okay, I have it up now.
You have it up. Okay. You read it for yourself. Yeah.
Okay. Should I read the first part? I don't know if it's a spoiler. I put it in my review because I was like, whatever, but
Maybe skip that part.
yeah, okay. So I'll just spoil my star rating. I gave it 3.5 stars. I loved the writing style in this book and the concept of a camp mystery with lots of class tension and beautiful but dangerous woods. And in the beginning, I was hooked. I really loved the building tension. Then it feels like the story just loses focus. There's way too much rising action for comparatively little payoff. I expected the end of the mystery to be way more dramatic and creative. Ultimately, this is better written than most modern mysteries, but the storyline felt expected and basic. So there
I
you
think it was the first sentence that really that you couldn't read that I was like, yes.
go.
But
Yeah, we
yes.
will talk about that in the spoiler section,
Yeah.
but yeah, I was just like, why?
No,
Yeah.
I 100% agree. I gave it 3 stars. I'm closer to a 2.5 if I'm being completely honest with myself. This book is way too long. Like, I'm sorry. The
Yeah.
setting's very beautiful. Characters are kind of interesting, although I think the character perspective changes throughout are a little jarring at times, and the time changes are very jarring at times. So I don't think it was seamlessly put together. Like, I feel like this author wrote non-continuously. Like, she wrote it as it is in the timeline without actually thinking about the timeline and piecing it together to make fluid sense. But
Yeah.
that's just my like reading interpretation. It took me fucking long time to read it, and I probably would have DNF'd it. But it is beautiful writing. I want to give the author her flowers and props because I loved how the setting was written, and I loved how the characters were written, and the class consciousness in this is crazy. It's so good. And I really think all of the themes were really well planned out, but the execution of the ending and the execution of the timeline wasn't it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was also a 3-star from me. It was a slow start. The most interesting character, in my opinion, you didn't meet till like halfway through. Then I was like, okay, now I'm kind of into it. Stuff's picking up. But then the ending, I was like, really? I was ready for much more of a mystery thriller than it ended up being. It was a mystery, as the one review said. I think Catherine read it was not a
Yeah.
thriller.
But it wasn't even a mystery because I kind of guessed this was going to happen.
Yeah, I also
Yeah.
thought the timeline was just a little disorganized for me. Thank goodness it wrote at the top like what of each
Yeah.
chapter, what time it was in.
You
I
would
did
know.
see, I saw reviews on audiobook that were like, I had no idea what
Yeah.
was happening because of all the POV time jumps. Like,
Oh my
you're an
God, they don't say it
audiobook.
out loud?
I don't know, but the reviews about the audiobook were like, don't read this as an audiobook.
No, if you're an audiobook reader, you need to just not read this book. Like it's impossible. It would be impossible to read in audio
Yeah,
format.
if you're not saying out loud the timelines and the time periods, you would have no idea. Which I think
Yeah,
that's where
it's.
this book gets docked multiple stars, is because you should be able to see if you're gonna do like mixed timeline, you should be able to seamlessly tell the difference between each time.
Yeah, it's hard. But like Catherine said, like I thought the imagery was like really evocative. I could picture the camp and I could picture the characters. And you knew enough of the backstories of the characters that it was interesting. However, some of the characters I didn't care about their backstory.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like it was 3 stars. It was a good book. It was not my favorite book. I think there are lots of people who do or would like this book. It's just like I was like, yeah, it was good, but I'm not writing home
Right.
about it, so.
Well, this is like
Right.
the first book I've ever read that was set in the Adirondacks.
Yes.
Right. No, I gave it 3.5, and I have debated knocking it farther down, but it really the writing style did float it for me. And like I love like one of my favorite just like themes and symbolism is when the setting is so strong that it's its own character. And I loved the sort of personification of the natural landscape. And it was so vivid in the way people talked about it. It's almost like it has its own personality. And so that was really the only thing that made this book worth reading to me.
I will say,
Yeah.
I wish the setting was more sentient because it was kind of like when you got to the end of the book, it dropped off completely where the setting was just the setting.
The title of the book really made you think it would have
magical realism.
Yeah. Yeah. That it would be, we're not sure what's really happening.
The title makes literally no sense until the last line of the story, and it should not have been titled that, quite frankly.
No.
No, I shouldn't have. Yeah, because it does set you up for something a lot more mysterious and mystical and like questioning of like, how are these people going missing? And like in an ideal world, I think that's how the book would have ended, with an ending where it's like, you know, insidious and we're still not really sure how the woods played, like almost making it fully committing to the realism part of the woods taking a role. I also will say it was way too long. Fully agree with that. And it felt like there was no intentionality behind what perspectives we get.
Yeah.
And half of them were just very not necessary. And they also just, for me, set up a lot of red herrings that were pointless and didn't really push the story forward. Like, this author spent a lot of time trying to make you think something and then kind of abandoning it. And then I also think it would have been thematically stronger if we only got the like low class perspective. So there's people mm-hmm. in the book who are sort of like the regular people. They live kind of normal lives, and a lot of them work for this one super wealthy family who runs this summer camp. But getting so much of like the wealthy people's perspective, I think actually weakened it thematically. Like, we know what they're like. Okay, we don't need to be in their heads. It didn't tell you anything we didn't need to know. And I mean, I think we get the mom's perspective because of the ending, but the whole time,
also, she was my least favorite perspective.
Yes, I wasn't interested.
I hated her perspective. Oh my God. Every other perspective was more interesting than hers. And so I think telling it without the rich people actually emphasizes the point that like all these other people are like seen and not heard, and you can build out the rich people's characters through their employees' perception of them. And I think that's a lot stronger of like a novel than what we got. And then like it makes its point a lot more clearly. And so
I feel like if you're going to play, like use an unreliable narrator, use an unreliable narrator. Don't use 10 of them.
Yeah. Well, and I totally agree. I don't think we needed the Van Lars perspectives at all, because honestly, it would have made them more godlike if we hadn't gotten their perspective and their struggles and their fights in between, and we only gotten the outside perspective. Then it truly could have been God of the Woods, because there would have been the richest people in town that control everything.
I also think if a certain person had ended up being guilty of all of the things, you could have called it God of the Woods.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
There were options for the title to make sense, and none of them were taken.
No, exactly.
Anyway, let's just get into our basic questions, because we clearly
Did we say what the overall ratings are?
We did not.
You know, I don't think we did. Okay. Goodreads, that was my bad. Goodreads overall rating of 4.2 out of 5. Amazon overall rating of 4.4 out of 5. And we all fell in the 3 range. So, like, a well-liked book.
Right.
Now we can get to the questions.
I will say, just a quick comment. My Kindle, every time I open it, now has James, this book, and The Women as the best books of 2024 to download, best fiction books of 2024. So this book is very, very highly regarded.
Really popular, and it's been on our list for a little while to get to. So if you like a good nature-based mystery, this may be your read.
Yeah, maybe.
So let's kind of... This is a good segue, because we were talking about the different character POVs. Do you think this book was more plot or character driven?
It's interesting because it's a very character driven book, mm-hmm. like in general. So there's the mystery, and I think all mysteries are like inherently plot driven, because ultimately the story is about finding out what happened. But most of the book is spent exploring the characters. And so the actual mystery kind of fades to the background for most of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of a mix of both, really, because, yeah, the mystery itself is very second hand for a lot of the book. It is way too much into the weeds about specific backstories.
Yeah. You get a lot of character they don't really develop. Yeah. But you get a lot of characters.
Way yeah, too many.
Just inherently being a mystery, I'm going to lean towards plot. But you lose the plot in the middle of the book anyway. So I don't know.
Okay. Have you or would you read other books by the author?
I have not, but I mean, I would consider it. I liked her writing style. I would look at how many pages are in her other books before deciding to pick one up.
Yeah, valid. Yeah, I also wouldn't be against picking up another one. This is the first book I've read by her, and I'd probably give my time to more of my favorite authors. But if this became popular again, something she wrote, then yeah.
So it looks like she publishes every 4 years, which is super interesting. Huh. Almost exactly every 4 years. So she's a book from 2007, a book from 2012, a book from 2016, one from 2020, and then God of the Woods is 2024. So I'm not really sure. I would actually be curious to read a book by her that wasn't a mystery.
Yeah, agreed. We've all sort of mentioned it, but how was the pacing of the book and how long did it take you to read?
The pacing is really the killer. Like, that's what makes, like, there's too many characters. Too many of them are ultimately extraneous to the plot. You spend a lot of time learning about their lives, and then most of that knowledge doesn't really contribute to any greater understanding of what happens. So this book just felt like, honestly, like, I agreed again. I think this came up in the reviews, and I think it was one of Catherine's reviews, where it's just like, she didn't really need the mystery. She wrote a book about oppression and class and class dynamics, and she did a really good job at that. But there's just, like, not much motor in the story. I think I still read it fairly quickly. I think it took me 5 days to read it, and it's pretty long. But the pacing was just, it was not good. I totally get why people would DNF this.
Yeah, it took me about 2 weeks to read. It's weird. I read it on Kindle, so I don't know how it looks in hardcover. But on Kindle, it's a fat book. That's fine. On Kindle, it's weird because instead of doing the chapters, it does it in parts. So
yeah,
normally I look at the bottom left-hand corner to tell me how much time I have left on a chapter, and it would say like 2 hours. And I was like, are you joking me?
Yeah, and so that parts helps and keep then the chapters.
But there's not chapters.
Like, numbered chapters. They're like POVs.
So I think that didn't help the pacing in my case, because like I wasn't like, oh, I can continue reading for another 10 minutes because I see that it's less than 9 minutes. So that kind of made it harder.
We read the same way on Kindle. That's fascinating to know.
Yeah.
Because you can choose, you know.
Yeah.
Right. I do the same thing. So we're all the same.
We're all time managing, okay? We want to know when the chapter's over so we can like get on with doing our stuff.
So true.
10 more minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it took me several days, but I read the bulk of it in one day because I ended up having a lot going on during this time period. And so I had a free day and I just sat down and dissociated and made myself read probably like 70% of the book, which did take me all day pretty much. Yeah, I think had I not sat down and just forced myself to read the whole thing, it would have been much longer because it is fairly easy to pick up and put down with how it's divided. And I don't know, I think I would have lost momentum if I didn't read it all at once. But I also wasn't super bored ever reading it. Like, I was engaged enough to sit there and read it for most of the day. So,
yeah.
50-50. I don't know.
Yes, I would say it is engaging. Like,
yeah,
even without the podcast, I would not have DNF'd this. I would have finished it for sure.
It was more, though, like not reading to get my questions answered. It was reading to see if I was right.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, cool. Well, that brings us to, oh wait, would you watch a movie or TV show? I almost forgot.
You know, I would be interested.
This could be a fun, it honestly gives Riverdale vibes.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Kind of.
If it kind of spun it like a CW show, it could be really interesting.
You could do kind of like a Knives Out style too.
Yeah. I'm not
that totally we have to make it funny, and this book's not funny.
Yeah, I'm not against a miniseries. However, knowing how it ends, I don't think I'm intrigued enough to watch the plot again. I think
people would be really angry with the ending if it was on TV.
Mm-hmm. Me too. So I think that's the only reason I would just kind of skip.
But it does sort of give Riverdale vibes.
It does. Very mysterious people in the woods.
Isolated community, rich isolated people versus the townies. Like,
Yeah.
All right. Well, busy girl rating.
I'm just going to match my quality rating and give it a 3. Not the best, but not the worst on busy girl scale. Like, it was fine to read. It just was a long book and wasn't, like, fast-paced.
If it was even 100 pages shorter, I could give it a 3, but I'm going to give it a 2 because it is 500 pages, and that's ridiculous for this book. So.
Yeah. So I came into this podcast ready to be really harsh on the busy girl rating. I think it's a 1. I really do. I think
totally fair.
There's no, I think it's an interesting novel still. I still gave it a quality rating of 3.5. Like, I was still interested. But I think if you're really busy, it's so slow and it takes so long to get to the payoff. And it sounds like we all three agree. We're personally like not super happy with the payoff. And so I'm like, if I was busy, I am busy, but I read it during a slow phase. And I just don't know that. What gets it for me is the thought of like having to pick it up and put it down multiple times. I just don't know that it's that kind of book. Because I know like I personally read it in probably like 5 different sittings where I binged it for like 2 hours. And if you can't do that, it's so long and slow.
That's true. We are all very quick readers. So if you don't read it fast enough, this book's going to be real slow.
If you're a slow reader and you have to pick it up and put it back down, you're going to lose your place. Almost guaranteed, because it just flips perspectives, flips times way too much.
And maybe I'm biased because I did sit down and read it pretty much all in one day. So,
right.
Okay. Well, since we were already trying to get into it earlier, are you guys ready for the spoiler alert section?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, our favorite thing I think we want to talk about, because we all seem to like it. What did you think about the setting of the Adirondacks and the Van Lars Preserve with the little camp on it?
Oh my God. Loved it. Loved. Oh my God. The fact that the house is called Self-Reliance is so good, because then you just, the entire book is basically about these people's servants, right? Like, you can't
write
a less self-reliant group of people in the world. And so I thought the commentary was great. Also, the fact that it was super taboo for the staff to be inside the house, and it was sitting up on this hill above everyone else. Like, I thought it was great how they just, kind of.
Yeah. And the annual party. Down.
Yes.
Yeah. And, the Black Flag goodbye.
Right. So I loved the woods. I loved that the woods were sort of mystical and dangerous, but also beautiful. I loved the dynamic with the family. Also, I personally went to a 3-week summer camp every summer. It was not for, the elite of the world, but I personally have
to be clear, it was for diabetics.
It was for diabetics. It was a diabetes camp. Type 1 diabetics. So I went to a camp.
One of my favorite facts about Casey.
Yeah, it was. It was a great time. And so everyone else at the camp was also type 1 diabetic. Yeah, I just also love summer camps, and I think there's a lot of really interesting dynamics to write about within summer camps and the kind of let loose, like, coming of age chaoticness of youth and being supervised by other youth. And so I thought that the whole, like, dynamics of the campers and the counselors was also really good. So yeah, the setting for me was like 10 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I also went to summer camp, so I felt very...
I was also a summer camp kid. I freaking loved summer camp. I even counseled summer camp.
Well, it's funny because this summer camp is so different to the one I went to because it's in Texas. We don't have fucking trees here. Like, we barely have trees. So, like, the idea of being lost in the woods is so funny to me because that is not possible in Texas. You can get lost in a desert. You cannot get lost in woods in Texas.
Right.
My camps did have woods, and...
Wow.
At least like the day camp I went to in elementary school growing up, part of it was like playing games in the woods. Like that was my happy place. It's like summer camp, hiking with friends. Like, I love all that stuff. And so I was very intrigued. I also loved how it started off the book with like the emphasis on, if you're ever lost in the woods, sit down and yell help.
Scream. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a good way to set it up. Now it kind of like built that momentum and then lost it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I actually, I really loved the setting. And I was like, ooh, I haven't been to the Adirondacks yet. I think that might be where I need to go next.
Yeah, I've just never thought of the Adirondacks, even though like I knew they were up there in the Catskills and stuff like that. It's so interesting how at the start of the book, they talk about how the camp is on the preserve. And it was kind of like this goodwill gesture between the Van Lars and the community at large. And I loved how they talked about the town now relied entirely on this camp to make money because all of their services and their mills had shut down because it's in the middle of nowhere, Shattuck, New York. And so the paper mill had shut down. I think the lumber mill had shut down. There was a couple of different mills that had shut down.
The t-shirt factory or something.
The t-shirt factory. So now their industrial, like where everyone had a job, is now gone. So they have to figure out a way to make money. So most of them went and looked at the Van Lars house.
Also, I don't think we've mentioned this. This book takes place in like the 60s and 70s. So kind of interesting because, you know, you don't have cell phones and things. So that added sort of to the mysteriousness, but also not, but like,
yeah,
you know, they were pretty disconnected out in the wilderness,
right? And it was a lot harder. They don't have all the technology that we have to be able to find people, and
right,
you know,
they had hounds. That's how you found people.
Exactly. And like investigating a mystery was somewhat difficult because I think this is like the very beginning of like DNA technology, so it adds a lot of like limitations to the police and what they can do.
When it's like the volunteer fire department, that's how rural and far out this is. Like,
that was another thing I really liked, is I thought she wrote really well the power dynamic between the police and the Van Lars. Because for most people, right, if you're talking to the police are the ones that have a power. You know, they're this institution that you can be in trouble with, and it's scary for most people to like be interacting with the police, like at least to some degree, and obviously different for different communities. Anyway, my point was just that when most people interact with the police, they are the less powerful person in the room, but with the Van Lars, you know, it's this rinky dink police department, volunteer fire department. Even with this, who like all of these people also worked for the Van Lars, like the people who are supposed to be investigating it initially, also employed by the Van Lars, they eventually bring in the state troopers. And even with the state troopers, the Van Lars are still the more powerful people in the dynamic. And that was really interesting to read.
It was especially interesting when you added in, because in 63 is when Bear goes missing, and then in 75 is when Barbara goes missing. And in 63, it's all men, all male police force. And then you add in Judy or Judita. She starts to question the Van Lars because she experiences unfair, unjust dynamics in her daily life because she's the first female detective in New York. So she's just kind of like, every day I go and I experience injustice and I experience like the power dynamics. So she's the only one that's actually questioning the Van Lars and saying like, why are we just allowing this to happen where they get to just decide who runs this case and who does what? Like, why is this a thing? And the men were just fine to go along with the status quo. And she's just like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, which this is a good segue into the next question of what did you think of the characters? You have the Ban Lahr family whose children, Bear and Barbara, disappear. You have all the camp people, the town people, and then you have Judy, who, when I said the most interesting character doesn't appear until 50% through the book, that's who I was talking about.
Yep, it's Judy.
The best character.
Yeah. Yes, who at the end, though, let me down. I was like, what the hell, Judy? Yeah. Anyway, yeah, she was the most interesting by far. And just because also through her, you got the investigation, which was the most interesting part of the book.
Yes.
Alice sucked. I hated her.
The worst. Yes.
The worst. Yes.
Tracy was okay, I think, because she gave you an insight into like Barbara and the camp dynamics.
Mm-hmm. I liked Tracy.
Okay. I get Tracy and Louise mixed up. Which are
Tracy's the camper. Trace,
yeah.
Okay. So
Louise kind of sucked too, quite frankly.
Louise is the camp counselor, right?
Yeah. Yeah. She's just a red herring, in my opinion.
She was. I will say I did really like her because she was clearly super smart and had gotten in, mixed in with these rich kids. But I liked her because I felt like she was so practical about dealing with them. And like, she was very aware of the dynamics. And I also thought it was interesting watching how she was almost blamed for what happened, right? Like, she was trying to protect herself and these rich kids basically closed ranks to like make her the fall person.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting.
I think she irritated me because I'm like, girl, you are in an abusive relationship. Get out.
Yeah.
I mean, that it was irritating, but I liked Louise because of all of that she had to go through in a time period in which, like, you're kind of supposed to stay with a serious long-term relationship. There's no really dating around. And she's coming from really nothing and a drug addict mother into kind of high society, and she's seeing a way out of her situation. All she really focuses on is helping her brother. And
she also did give you insight into TJ a little bit more. Which was important.
I did like
it ended up.
I also did like that. The part about her that frustrated me was that this boy was clearly lying to her, and she even knew that he was lying to her. Like, you can tell that she knows, and she's just like not ready to like admit it to herself. And that was the part where I was like, okay, Louise, you know that you're not going to marry him. Like, but I also got it because that was really her only way out. You know, she had tried to go to college and she was really smart, and then she just didn't have the money. And so I understand why she like clung to this one opportunity, but I was like, girl, you're smart enough. She's lying.
I did love that in the end, the person, her CIT was going out to meet ended up being her supposed fiance. I was like, oh, she betrayed you so bad.
I kind of knew that that was coming.
Also, though, she's like, what was she like, 17, 18?
17.
Now? Yeah. 17, yeah.
Yeah, the rampant like abuse of young women was like very present in this novel. Oh, yeah.
Well, and I thought that was really interesting because it was okay with the family that them two were dating in that case. But when Lee Townsend is dating a 16-year-old and he's 19, which is closer in age, and they freak out.
He gets charged
with statutory rape. It's all about class. Like, the two rich kids can date and it'd be quote unquote consensual. But when a poor boy comes in.
Peter and Alice were not close in age at all.
Not at all.
She came out into society and then was auctioned off.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I will give you the one thing I did not see coming was that the person he was sleeping with was her sister.
Oh, I knew that as soon as I saw.
No, that was the one that surprised me too. The other
really?
One, yeah, the other ones I saw coming, that one I was like, what the fuck?
I know. I was like, wait, what?
I knew the minute, as soon as she felt so comfortable talking at dinner and introducing her to the family, I was like, she's sleeping with Peter. Yeah.
But, ooh, I just can't imagine as an old sister being like, well, I've already married this guy, but I like this one who's friends with the guy I married, so let me auction off my sister so I have an excuse to see him and sleep with him.
Well,
what?
She had a polyamorous relationship is what she admitted.
I know, but why would you then engage your little sister to the man?
Yeah, it was really messed up.
It was fucked up.
Yeah.
As a big sister, I like hated her.
She was most hated character of the book. Yeah.
I thought for a while, I thought she was going to be the guilty one.
Interesting.
I thought, I mean, yeah, I didn't think she was the guilty
one. It was because
she said,
I'm sorry, and it didn't explain it until later. I was like, oh, she was obsessed with Bear. Did she kidnap him?
I knew pretty quickly on that she was sleeping with him. And that's when I got really frustrated with her comments towards Alice about, like, you can leave, you can get out of here, like, you can stand up, you can have fun outside of this relationship. Like, she was telling her, like, giving her permission, quote unquote, to do these things. And, like, I'm like, you come from a place of quite literal privilege with your husband that allows you to do these things. And the fact that you were well educated and the fact that you were treated very differently than your sister. Your sister was never taught anything and then sold off to the highest bidder, who turns out to not really care if she's educated or not, just wants her as a broodmare and then to raise his child. That's it. And so I was like, you can't come in here with the high and mighty treatment and say, like, you can get out, you can leave if you want. No, she can't. Like, that's not something she was ever taught that she could do.
Right.
And it's also rich to be saying that while sleeping with the man that you're encouraging her to leave.
Yeah, that's why I knew it was happening. I was like, oh, you are pissing me off. I know. Just tell me that you're sleeping with him.
Yeah, it was awful. I think you just mentioned it, Catherine. So I'll like jump in on the, what's his name? The guy who was like convicted of statutory rape.
Lee Townsend.
I will say a 19-year-old sleeping with a 16-year-old is still wrong in my opinion.
100%.
However,
yes,
it was also super hypocritical of all of them who are like basically allowing the sexual assault of their own daughters. But that was like my least favorite red herring in the whole book, is they were like, oh, we'll just throw in this random, like, quote unquote rapist. I was like, okay.
Yeah, you could have taken him out entirely.
This man did nothing. I mean, okay, he did sleep with a 16-year-old. Not great, but it was a very different situation than, it was more complicated than it seemed at first. And it's also just like, okay, so now you just threw that in there for what? So now we're just about to be like, oh, this man and like the man who escaped from prison, who is really perhaps innocent or something. And then it was like, but no, he was crazy. But he didn't kidnap those girls. He just kidnapped other girls. I was like, stop.
Yeah. I'm still iffy on Jacob Sluder and his whole timeline and him going up to his ancestral land. I was interested in that because it made it seem like he was like semi-magical or semi-like.
Yeah.
Yes, like, I thought he was going to be the god of the woods.
Yeah, like, I thought he was.
That's his hunting ground.
Yeah, commune in nature kind of thing. Right. I didn't like Lee Townsend because I feel like the only reason why he was in the book was so that he could tell Louise that her fiance was cheating on her with her CIT. You could have done a different way to find that out.
Right.
You could have taken him out entirely. And that's the only thing that he was needed for. Jacob, on the other hand, was interesting because he definitely brought insight into the case with Bear that we find out was kind of more in an accident than anything else.
Very convenient, right. By the way.
Very, very convenient. Not sure how I feel about that, but I liked Jacob in the sense of like he had lied a lot of times and he's done some pretty awful, terrible things. And he's definitely like committed crimes and murdered people and raped people.
Right.
But he didn't know that he, because everyone asked, like, why didn't you tell the truth? And he was just like, I didn't know if anyone would believe me. And that kind of brought in the interest. Yeah, that brought in that interesting tidbit of like, oh, OK,
right.
He's telling the truth now because of the situation. But no one would have believed him if he had come out earlier about it.
Right. I think the part about it that annoyed me is it felt a little ripoff Silence of the Lambs. Like, oh, the only person he'll talk to is Judy and he's going to be all weird and gross and perverted. And I was just like, OK, this
I've
is just
seen that in like every crime show ever, too.
Yeah, it's just like this is just a rewritten Silence of the Lambs. But I did enjoy that he saw. Right. Like he did actually add things to the book. So I feel like I can't complain about him too much. I personally didn't love Tracy's perspective. I really didn't think we needed that, honestly. She does add a lot of depth to
Barbara,
which I do think was good. I just sometimes felt like the proportions were off, right? Like, we were spending too much time with the wrong characters. And that's kind of how I felt about Tracy, is like, I'm not really mad she was in the book, but there's a point where I was like, okay, this is a little too much Tracy now.
It was kind of an excessive amount. We didn't need her full backstory.
Her little camp crush or any of that.
Yeah.
But how she saw Barbara as a god, essentially. And that's why the only way the title works.
Right. Okay. I'm like, I don't even know who the other characters are. There's so many.
Well, Vic and TJ.
Yes, I did like TJ.
Yeah. Yes. And the stuff with her dad got really weird.
Yeah.
And then you get a POV from him at the end to tell the story.
Which wasn't necessary.
No. And it basically is like, he was supposed to inherit the camp, but Peter was keeping it from him. So he went along with hiding Bear's death to make sure he would inherit the camp, and therefore TJ would be set up for success. I was like, if you loved this kid, that's still a shitty reason to go along with it.
Yeah. So I feel like at this point we should just like start talking about the ending, because that's really the crux of all this. The part of my review that I didn't read at the beginning is that my biggest pet peeve in mystery novels is when we get to the end and no one really did anything wrong.
And there are no consequences for the people who actually did do something wrong.
Zero consequences. Because, look, people in the book did bad, very morally gray to straight up wrong things. But, like, everything was an accident, and then people just did their best after. Like, the woman, I constantly forget her name. Anna? What's the
Alice?
Name? Alice. Alice kills Bear on accident. And then the other Van Lars and the people working for them.
She is drunk and drugged out of her mind.
Right. I mean, she was grieving and depressed and made very, very irresponsible, reckless decisions as a parent, and should have been tried for manslaughter. So she was, but like outside of being a bad mom, she did not mean to kill her child. It was not a deliberate murder. And then the family just like helped her cover it up. And so everyone kept quiet for their own reasons, but basically, like, the Van Lars used their economic power to make sure that, like, TJ and her dad didn't say anything, and then they just kind of closed ranks and no one ever did anything about it. And then in the present timeline, Barbara just escapes. They're going to send her to this abusive school, and so she escapes. I was like, I'm sorry, but this is like the most boring, least interesting version of an ending we could have possibly gotten, where everything is just fine. There are no consequences. No one did anything really, really bad. There was no deliberate or insidious powers at work. The family is not even as bad as we really think they are. They're just kind of corrupt rich people. But like, I was like, what? Why did I read 500 pages to find out that someone's an accidental murderer?
It felt too neat and tidy and wrapped up in a bow. Like, I feel like if you're going to make it a mystery thriller, yes, you have to solve the mystery, but I think you have to leave parts of it unsolved and parts of it untold. And, like, there has to be death and there has to be some sort of chaos.
Well, and the point I saw in a review that I was like, thank you. The first woman investigator in the entire state is not going to swim to an island, see a 13-year-old living alone and say, okay, good enough for me, and move on. Like, what the heck? No.
Yeah. Right. It was crazy. And it's also just like, I felt like the author wrote it so that everyone was like as the least amount guilty they could be as possible. Like, no one made any like truly unforgivable decisions. Like, yes, Alice did something really dangerous and reckless with her child that she shouldn't have done. But the whole story,
actually, Paul just kind of sucked, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, but it's like,
he was the only bad person.
He was. And it was kind of like, but the whole book is just like apologizing for her, because it's about how depressed she was and how like horrible and abusive her relationship was. And she just got this information about her sister. And so it's basically like apologizing for her and making her mistake almost less bad. And then it's like, okay, now that your son is dead, what's the family going to do? You can kind of understand why they wouldn't want, like, nothing they can do is going to get their son back. So you can kind of understand why they just didn't do anything about it. And then she also gives TJ and her dad a total out for their role in everything, because it's like, well, like, I'm going to fuck over my child and we're going to lose our whole, like, our whole purpose in life and our whole economic well-being if we speak out. So it's just like gave everybody an out. And I was like, I'm sorry, good mystery novels have villains. Why is there no villain in the story?
Yeah, there needed to be more insidious characters. I mean, you have Fallen
Slitter, but neither of them end up being actually involved.
No, they have side plots, essentially, where John Paul, the only thing he's going to get charged for is like beating up his ex-girlfriend, Louise. And even that was looking dicey, where it's just kind of like he may go to jail, but he's rich. So like,
and TJ, the person who helped all these people, is probably going to end up in jail. But it never said that.
Right.
And some of the two Peters might end up in jail. We'll see.
Right.
Kind of. That was the energy.
Okay. My favorite thing, though, was that Scary Mary, the camp story, ended up being a real person.
No, yeah. That was cool. I like that idea.
I did too. I did
too. And she is the one who helped Tracy, apparently. Mm-hmm. But that was actually really funny.
It was funny.
Oh, camp stories are all real.
Yeah. I mean, also terribly freaky if, like, you were a camper and you thought you saw, like, an old woman in the woods, and it turned out that you did indeed see an old woman in the woods and she wasn't just a ghost story. Fucking freaky.
Well, and yeah. Like, did we need her husband's POV? Not really. It added some depth to the bear story, but, like, I don't know.
There were a lot of places to cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like they were the real victims, but then we don't even ever really sit with that, right? Like, it doesn't ever come back in a meaningful way. And that's part of also why I just feel like in the end, she just kind of let everyone off easy, because I feel like no one even really had to, like, sit with the consequences of what they had decided. And I was just like, okay, so why did I just read all this? And now Barbara's living happily in the woods by herself, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, living happily in the woods by herself, even though technically TJ's supposed to come get her, but that's probably not going to happen. So she's just going to be in the woods.
Why didn't we make her older so that she could get emancipated faster? TJ's really dumping a 13-year-old out there. Like, I know TJ prepped her and everything. They're like, really?
Yeah, it was crazy.
She prepped her for 2 months.
Yeah.
Years.
Right.
Yeah.
This is so random, but I also want to say a part of the book that I also kind of enjoyed, just in a nerd way, is that the Elon school that they were talking about is actually a real place. I think they changed the spelling, but the pronunciation is the same. And it's the same type of school that Paris Hilton was abused in and has been campaigning against. And there is this free comic online, it's just like an internet comic that details one person's experience at the same school, the Elon school. And he does the same thing where he just like slightly changes the pronunciation of the name. But I thought that was just sort of like weirdly, really interesting. Also because I mentioned in one of our previous episodes, there's a Netflix documentary about a school in the same, owned by the same people. And so, yeah. Just a random note, but that school is like a real place and they're like incredibly abusive and part of this broader network of like disciplinary schools that are like really, really problematic.
Which the reason TJ has to help Barbara escape this future is because TJ was in Barbara's room giving her food because her parents suck. Like,
yeah. Their parents wild. Tried to starve her because she's not skinny enough. Yeah.
Yeah. That was crazy.
Entirely their fault. Yeah.
And also they only had her because they were trying to replace their dead son. And then they got a daughter who they didn't even want. I was like,
which is horrible. That's the only time I felt bad for Alice, is that she's going absolutely batshit crazy, but then has to get impregnated. Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
And so much later, too. The age gap was kind of weird if you're trying to, like, secure your dynasty.
Yeah. No, it was.
But
okay. So, I don't even know. What do we have left?
I think just the last question.
Okay, so if this camp was available to you when you were younger, would you want to attend? Would your parents allow you to go?
Why would I go to a rich kid camp?
I mean, I think when I wrote this question, it's more of the survival aspect of it. Because, like, summer camps nowadays are very, like, arts and crafts and lake fun and tubing. Like, it's more of fun activities, less about learning how to live outdoors. Right. So would you consider going to a camp that had a survival component to it?
My dad would have loved it if I had gone to a camp like that. I mean, he would have had me on the next train. And I gotta say, it depends on the exact age. You know, when I was a little bit older, I was kind of less interested in that stuff. But if I was around their age, like 12, 13, I feel like I actually would have been really into it. Like, you get to go to these beautiful woods and learn all these kind of random survival techniques. That sounds kind of fun.
With boys.
Yeah, with boys.
So my mom and all her siblings and her dad were all scouts growing up. So my mom has, like, the fondest memories of Campfire Girls. That was her scout thing she was in. And her brothers were super into, like, they were Eagle Scouts. My grandpa led, like, Boy Scout camp and stuff. And so I think she would have been like, yeah, sure, let's sign you up for this, because that's kind of what she did. But, like, she also, like, I know how to build a fire. Like, I know some of this stuff just because, I don't know, I think I've learned it through her and other places. But, I probably would have been all over it. Now, I did work at a rich kid's summer camp one summer. Fun fact. Wow. I did not realize how there was a very strong division at this. It was a church camp. But, and there are many, many things I could talk about working at this camp. But I worked in the kitchen. It sucked. And you knew which ones were the rich kids and which ones were there on scholarship, because the kids that were there on scholarship would say thank you.
Oh,
wild.
Yeah.
So I have been Louise to some extent. And I was like, what is this nonsense?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would not want to work in a rich kids camp. But yeah, I remember my summer camp. I mean, it wasn't like summer camp when you stay away camp is not cheap. But I didn't go to a rich kids camp.
No, right. And mine were always church camps if it was like stay away. Or I did go to student council camp, which was on a college campus. Like, I was a nerd and really involved in my youth group. So those were my camp experiences.
To be fair, my camp did have a Christian component to it, but that was not the majority of it. Like, we went to Sunday, quote unquote, like mass or gathering in the woods and sang songs about Jesus and God. But like, I ignored most of that stuff. I just was there for the water slides and having a good time.
I will say, as a high school college student, getting to have campers who were like sixth grade girls was so fun because they're so weird and just want to be your best friend. And I freaking loved being a camp counselor even more than a camper.
Yeah,
that sounds fun.
One year they gave me all the like popular girls of sixth graders. I was like, what do I do with these? They were all like straightening their hair before going tubing. I was like, girls, we need to have a talk.
Don't do that. Yeah. Straightening your hair before tubing?
Whose idea was it to give them to me, who's there in my bucket hat ready to like lead campers? And the girls are like, why are you wearing that? I'm like, who did this? My whole personality was summer camp for many years. I had a blog called Life is Like Camp briefly.
Wow. Damn. Damn.
Camp influencer.
So you would have definitely gone to this camp. I mean, okay. I would
they
be interested.
Very formative to who I was for a long time.
Yeah.
I would be interested in portions of the camp. I would tell you right now, if this camp you carbon copied and put it in Texas, fuck no, I would not go. It's too fucking hot here in the summer. I need air conditioning at some point. And two, you wouldn't get shade. You would be sleeping next to rattlesnakes and water moccasins, and I fucking hate snakes, so that's not happening either. But I would maybe do it in the Adirondacks, where I'd feel at least a little more comfortable. I'm less afraid of like furry animals than I am reptiles, so I can deal with bears.
Right. No, it's really the rich kid part that does turn me off.
Yeah, same. Exactly.
Yeah, my regular camp was kind of regular people, but I did go to two camps just sort of sporadically and for different reasons in my youth that were definitely like rich kid camps, and I had a horrible time at both. I was like totally, I was totally Tracy. So
I kid you not, one of the people who I worked with in the kitchen at the Rich Kid Camp, her entire job, I don't know, she doesn't have a job. All I see, I follow her on Instagram still, we were not friends, but all she does is travel around the world and post pictures at like fancy ski resorts or like Bali or whatever. Like, she's literally just a rich kid who travels the world.
So jealous.
Rich kid at like 28 or whatever, you know.
Jesus.
God.
Well, it's insane.
Yeah, to the lives that we don't have.
Yeah. To the kids who experienced authentic summer camp, not rich kid camp.
Right. Yes. I think that's it then. Do you guys have any recommendations to make?
Yes, actually. I thought of this while we were... It gives the same vibes as a book we all did not love.
Yes.
A History of Wild Places.
Yeah.
This book did it better. It did it better than A History of Wild Places.
It was better than A History of Wild Places.
It did. And it, A History of Wild Places tried to work in the magical realism, and it didn't do it well. This one, I guess, just left it out, which saved it a little bit.
But it they're both fine.
They both had good vibes in the woods, you know.
I'm going to recommend James. Because while I was reading this book, I was like, I wish I was reading James, because I liked that vibe more.
I'm trying to think. I think I'm going to recommend some real throwback books.
More than mine that was the second episode we ever did.
I'm trying to remember. I read these books so long ago. I'm trying to remember. There are these two books that I read as kids that were super nature-y, and one of them I can't remember the name of, unfortunately. But the other one is Call of the Wild. I can't remember, Caitlin. I feel like you hated that book, but
it's a dog one.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I to be fair, I read that book actually like as a child.
Children so I should not read that book. Also, it's so very violent.
Yeah, it was pretty violent. My dad actually read it to me, and I think that he just skipped over some of the more brutal scenes. But anyway, if you really like a book where nature is one of the main characters, I think I really loved that book as a kid. One of the other ones that I really loved is called The Yearling. And it's another book. It's like set in the country. And I also read it as a child. But it's this like really cute story of this doe, like Bambi, basically, who gets adopted by this family. And so neither of those books have anything to do with mysteries, but they both have like really, really strong basis where the natural world is like really important to the story and is like a really important character. So.
Okay. I will also give you, I was looking back at some books I'd read. A book I read as a arc a while ago where the woods end up being sort of a sentient, malevolent character. It's called Whisperwood by Alex Woodrow. I liked it pretty well, and I feel like it's much more like what you would think from the book title that we of the God of the Woods.
Right. All right, cool. Anything else, anybody?
I don't think so. Rate and review, recommend us to your friends, follow us at Busy Girls Pod, pretty much everywhere. TikTok for now, I don't know.
Hey, it's back.
Mostly Instagram. And then feel free to visit our website, busygirlspod.com, where you can find these book recommendations. Go back and listen to our other episodes and check out what we've been writing about. And let us know what you want us to read next. We're also on YouTube now. You can watch our podcast, yes, watch, on YouTube and on Spotify. So with that, we will catch you next time. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening, and when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.